Welcome to the Chris Ruggiero Podcast with your host, Chris Ruggiero.
Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for downloading and subscribing on iTunes. This is a show where I talk to entertainers, travelers, and other inspiring people about their adventures. This week's guest is a magician from San Francisco named Ryan Kane. One of my favorite parts about talking to him was when we were talking about his blog. You know, it comes up a few times during our chat because he writes this blog that is very much aimed towards magicians and performers. When I asked him about it, he said that somebody that he knew came to him and told him that she was reading it and it was actually useful, and she was using some of the things that he was talking about in her job, and she's not a performer, she just works at an office or something. And I really like that because I'm hoping that's what happens with this podcast. You know, I know I talk to a lot of entertainers and magicians and variety artists because that's who a lot of the people that I know are. I'm hoping that through talking to these people, you can get something out of it, no matter what your job or what your hobbies or interests are. So here he is, Ryan Kane. So what are you up to? What's going on?
Dude, I just got back. I've been out of town for a week. I went down to LA. I wish I could say it was for shows, but I was in LA because my friend was graduating, which is great. Got to go to Disneyland, all that stuff.
Nice.
And then I was performing in the Jazz Festival in Old Sac, which is like one of my kind of hidden street pitches, festival pitches. And then I came back yesterday because I got Giants tickets. So that's all I've been up to, traveling around.
Nice. How much are you working street shows a lot right now?
Yeah, the summer's picking up. I perform at Pier 39. You knew that. Yeah, when we met the first time, I was still doing that, I think. So, but yeah, like, Pier 39 is like a weird stage. You've worked it before.
It's just weird.
It's ruined my ability to, like, gather that. How was that for you? Did you like that?
Yeah, I don't really like working the street, though. It was fun, but I don't like I like when they're sitting down and can't go anywhere.
Yeah, and that's the thing about piers. There's actually, like, seats that they'll sit in. And, like, I used to, because I started with street performing and busking, so I'm used to, like, being able to gather a crowd. But if Pier 39, like, the shows are announced, and there's a sound system, and there's music. And so then I, you know, get used to that. And now I'm going out in the street corners, and I'm like, why is nobody watching me? I used to be good at this.
Right, yeah, you get used to it. Yeah, I think the pier is kind of, like, not really street performing from what it's like.
It really is.
You're doing a show outside.
Yeah, totally. More like a festival show, if anything.
How does that, because you do theater stuff and then you also do walk around stuff. So how does that kind of, how do those three, like, or more, those different types of venues that you work in, how do they compare, and how do you kind of, like, get ready and prepare yourself for doing something compared to, like, doing something on the street towards a theater, towards then, like, a walk around show at, like, a dinner party or something?
Right. Yeah, walk around's, like, definitely, like, kind of my bread and butter of, like, my corporate work and, like, the book shows. Like, I get booked to do a lot of walk around stuff. And to me, I mean, that's just, like, going to work. I got all my case. I show up, very little preparation, like, just because I've been doing it for so long. And to me, walk around's more about just being social. Like, they're hiring you just to be, like, the life of the party. So it doesn't really matter if I'm even doing magic, as long as people are having good times and I'm making people laugh. So my goals are very, very, very different. It's way less about me and, like, my show or a message or anything about that. It's just about making people have fun, making people connect. Like, a lot of times people hire me to get people that don't know each other to talk to each other. Like, I do that at weddings a lot, because you have, you know, the bride side and then the groom side, they don't know each other, and then I can come in and kind of bring them together. And that's, you know, street shows, obviously it's a lot more frantic because people can leave. It's much more structured. But it's also cool because it doesn't matter. Like, if the show sucks, you know, you're not getting a check or anything. You're not responsible anymore. And then theater is what stresses me out. I love it, but, like, not, you know, it's like, is there going to be an audience? You know, my worst thing is, you know, selling a show and having, like, 14 people show up. I'd rather have nobody show up rather than, like, you know, just a few, because then they're sitting around like, this sucks. Like, is this guy good? What are we in for? So I love theater tickets because getting those little, I love selling tickets because you get, your phone will, like, beep and be like, oh, you just sold 2 tickets. And that's just, like, you know, that's fun. You know, it's like getting a Facebook invite, but you're getting money. you know, you're that much up there. You're not close to me.
Yeah, that's a cool idea. Going into a wedding situation like that, where you're facilitating some sort of, you know, you're kind of facilitating the gathering. How about when you're in a theater? You know, that's kind of your goal. Like you said, that's kind of a neat thing too, where you said you don't even have to do magic sometimes. If you get people laughing and people connecting, then that's your main job. How about going into a stage show or a theater show? What's your goal like coming out? What do you want the people to walk away from your show feeling or saying or, you know, telling their friends?
Right. Well, first and foremost, you know, good show. I want them to have fun and things. Theater's great because they're coming to see me, so I can do stuff that I can't necessarily do at like a corporate show or like even on the street. Like I've been working on like a water to wine trick, and I have a trick that has a poem that I would never really do in other places. But to me, it's like, you're coming to me. This is my show. I could do whatever I want as long as it's entertaining. You know, I want you to kind of get to know me and feel like you've seen some stuff. You've seen magic in a way that you've never seen it before. And, you know, I'd love to be, ultimately, I'd love to be having a show somewhere that I could, you know, just, and that's what I was doing in the theater. That'd be a great goal, but, that's hard. That's really hard to do. There's some people that have done it. There's a guy in the Bay who's done it. There's a guy who has like his own magic theater out in Hawaii, and that's all they do. And they just sell tickets and nobody knows who they are unless you're visiting Hawaii. And, you know, that'd be really cool. But right now I'm young. You know, I like traveling. I like doing other things. So I'm not really totally ready to settle down and do that just yet.
I was checking out your blog in the past couple of days to kind of get into mindset a little bit. And tell me a little bit about that. You write, your blog is very oriented towards magicians and performers, I feel like. But do you keep in mind a general public for that also?
You know, it's funny. I just had somebody who's not a magician at all read one of my blog posts, and she was like, oh, I'm totally going to apply this to my work. And she has like a desk job. And I never even thought about that.
Yeah, that's awesome. There's a lot of psychology and things like that that, you know, you're writing from your standpoint. And that's really cool. That's what I was wondering, if you kind of keep that in mind at all, that some other people might be able to apply it. But that's great. If someone's reaching out and saying that, you know, without you even trying, they're kind of taking it their own direction.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. I love looking at, you know, one of the best books I ever read was The Apple Experience. I forget who it's by. And it's like how it's customer service based on Apple. But, you know, any of us can read that and learn a lot about like how to interact with customers. So I'm huge in crossover between different markets and different, you know, things. So if people want to read my magic blog and want to apply it to their own lives, that's fantastic, even if it's not magic. But yeah, I started blogging, I don't know, 3 years ago, probably even longer than that. And it, you know, I'm very aware, like I'm still young. There's a lot of stuff I don't know, but I was like, these are thoughts. I need to get them organized, put them out there. And then it also forces me to stick to that. So if I say, hey, don't use this stupid presentation or don't say this thing or don't patronize your audience. Now, if someone sees my show, they'd be like, what the hell? Like, you just did that. And it kind of keeps me, it ups my standards. And I like that. A lot of my blog posts begin like, this is what I'm aiming for. I'm not doing it. So if you catch me breaking these rules, please, please, please tell me so I can fix it. Cause you know, I think that's how we get better.
Yeah.
So I like doing it.
That's cool too. Since, you know, you and I are similar in that we have our solo show. It's just us. So, and there's a different audience every night. So there's not really anyone to hold us accountable to what we say we're going to do or something. You know, you can say, oh, I'm going to do it this way tonight. And then you can, you know, you get scared and you just go back to the ways that you are more comfortable doing. So that's kind of a cool,
totally.
Like,
and it gets to muscle memory, you know?
Yeah.
So, you just get to that part of the show and you're just going to say this thing, even though you mean to change it because you have a better way and you just can't even stop it sometimes. And it's like,
Yeah, but that's cool. Getting it on the blog creates some sort of accountability that you're going to actually make it happen.
Yeah, totally.
There was a post on there that you talked about. I forget under what heading it was under, but it talked about decide what you're going to tell people you're capable of doing as a magician. And
That's like one of the older.
Yeah, and then maybe I think it even went into then kind of acknowledge what you're not capable of doing, how far you can go.
Yeah.
So you personally, where do you what's your presentation of what you do, what your brand of magic is? You know, so some people come out and say they can, you know, communicate with the dead people. And then some people come out and just present it as, hey, I'm telling jokes and I'm doing these funny tricks.
Yeah. It's, you know, to me, I'm definitely, I guess you'd classify me as a comedy magician because there's a lot of comedy in my show. And I am a magician. I'm up front. I call them tricks in the show, which a lot of magicians like hate. You know, you don't say trick around audience members. And to me, I'm like, I don't care. Like, that's what it is. Really, what my power is I created a show, and I'm really good at making it look like I can do impossible things. So that actually kind of opens me up to be able to do anything, as opposed to, like, we have a mutual friend. We met David Gerard. Who's a mentalist, and all he can do is read minds, because that's a clearly defined thing for him. That's a clearly defined subset. And if every time he branches out, he can't do it. Whereas I'm a lot more open to, I can do it. I'm doing this new thing. I do a paintball catch with a paintball gun. And there's this new thing just went in the show where after they picked a paintball, I'm pouring the rest in and one falls down, like just as a mistake. And then I just reach my hand out and it just floats up into my hand and then drops back into the container, and I just close it up. Like that's no big deal. Nice. I can do that because I'm a magician. It's understood that, yeah, this is, you know, he's just fooling around. This is all planned ahead of time, but the goal is to make it feel like it wasn't planned ahead of time, because you don't want them to ever see the script. But yeah, that's like one of my new favorite kind of big pieces in the show. It's fun.
Yeah, that's cool to create a moment where the audience is kind of looking for something to either go wrong or something, and then you create this thing, and then you're one step ahead of them.
Yeah.
It's something really cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. You know, people love to see the magician in trouble.
So yeah, we talked about David Gerard. If you guys have never heard of him, look him up. He's a mentalist and a mind reader type performer. Do you collaborate with any other magicians or performers? Where do you kind of work on new material and stuff with other people?
Yeah, David and I talk a lot. He's probably one of my go-to guys. I also have a number of the other Bay Area guys like Jay Alexander. I'll run ideas by Robert Strong. But, you know, I'm very much like, and I think it's the street performer kind of mentality of like, I'd much rather just put something together, go out and try it, and work it up, workshop it out, and get it to be like really kind of good before giving it to people and being like, what is this? So I don't, you know, I'm really in magic. There's a thing called sessioning where you get together and you just like show like incomplete things that you're working on. And I've never been good at that. Like, to me, it's like, if I'm going to show you something, it's going to have some level of polish.
Right.
So, you know, I don't collaborate as much as I probably should, but I do it. David and I work a lot, and we really spitball ideas around and just, you know, say, what if? And that's why we got along. I mean, what we do is completely different, but we both have like this high standard, and it's fun.
Yeah, that's a cool thing too. A lot of performers don't work on the streets where, you know, like you said before, the streets, like, you can do something that completely sucks. And it's not the best thing to do. You don't want to be aiming for that. But if it does happen, you're like, well, who cares? You know, it's not the end of the world. So you can actually go out and experiment and push the boundaries and actually try to, you know, get well beyond what you're comfortable doing. And that's cool where you can do that, where you don't need to do it like within. So it's one thing working with, like you said, sessioning with another magician. But then that magician is actually seeing it from a magician's standpoint, which you're kind of losing something there. So you almost have this like edge on people because you're actually creating things and there's a real audience there that's going to act like, you know, normal people.
Well, and it's the best barometer in the world, because if it's good, they'll stop and watch. And if it's bad, they'll just walk away. Like, you have this instantaneous reaction and you can do it anywhere. And I live in one of the few cities where you can actually perform year round. You know, we're just getting to the summer. So now I'm like, all right, street show needs to be good. But for the past few months, I've just really just been playing around out there. And I broke my leg at the beginning of the year, so I cut my act down to two tricks. So I don't have to carry as much because I was on crutches. And, you know, I did a whole show. There was nobody stopping. there were like two people in the far back and like one person sitting up front, and I would not start the show because, you know, I don't care. So I just riffed and just joked with them for 35 minutes, the whole show length. I didn't do it. I didn't hat them or anything. I just joked and just, I was like, I'm going to see if I can throw a whole show, get these people to stay here the entire show and not do anything. And it was fun. I was kind of, you learn a lot doing that, pushing yourself to these little limits, and you come up with cool bits. I'm like, all right, cool. I can now take this and go back, you know, to my coffee shop and write this into a full routine and make it a real part of the show. So yeah. I love doing that. I love having that instant feedback of the streets.
Yeah, that's awesome. How often do you work at the pier?
So it is scheduled. I typically do probably 1 to 2 days a week. And sometimes it depends on how I load my schedule. So sometimes like I'll have a whole week where I'm there every day. And then other times it will be, pretty consistent. I'll get like a Tuesday or Friday. But you know, it just goes around whatever else I don't have booked. And you know, my other shows that I have booked, I'll just throw in the street shows. And lately I want to get out there and actually start street performing because 4th of July is coming up and that's a really big street day. And I want to be good so I can actually get some crowds and have some fun out there.
Yeah. So do you have any other processes for creating new material? As you know, I know we just talked about how you kind of do it. Is there other things or people that inspire you or like some sort of way that you kind of come up with new ideas to present to in your show?
I'm inspired a lot by music and by comedians and also theater. I grew up with seeing a lot of theater, so I can see a theater show and I can't help but just like, how can I take this idea and put it into a magic show? Or I really like that light design or this, you know, particularly comedians that will do very weird transitions. I'm a little obsessed with like transitions. Creative process, things either for me, they either start like on the street where I'm just kind of building it as I go. And then that becomes a full routine. I have entire routines that are, you know, start off as like one little joke and then they became this. And then I have other routines that are scripted straight from the start. Like my paintball routine, it's gone through, I think I'm on the fifth different script for it and it's still changing. And lately I've been hiring writers too. So I hired Thomas John. He was a juggler and he did some writing for me for a couple of that and my iPhone routine, which you've seen. And so, you know, I like writing and having everything really, really scripted, but at the same time, you can come up with some of your best stuff by just playing around in front of an audience. And again, I'm very fortunate in the fact that I have a venue that lets me do that.
Do you ever, you said you're in some 5 edits into, you know, your trick with your paintball routine. Do you ever finish a routine? Is it ever finished?
I mean, kind of. And then there will be like one little, you know, it always kind of gets to a part where it's like it's set and then it'll perform like that for a good couple months. And then I'll get unhappy with a certain part and then I'll change that. And, you know, little increments. Certain routines of mine have stayed pretty consistent for years. The oldest routines I do, like cups and balls and my rope trick. And paintball, the core trick hasn't changed much, but just little beats have changed and I'm growing it, you know, like the, you know, dropping the paintball and making it float up, it's a new beat in there. And, you know, I'd like to say you eventually were like, all right, it's done, walk away. But then you find something and you can fix it. And I think you're kind of wrong not to fix it. You should always be polishing and trying to improve your material. They're not songs. They don't need to be, you know, you're not going to release it and then it's done. You're constantly doing it. And that's the variety arts, is you can constantly be improving and changing and experimenting and you know, it's great. It's, what is it? Michael Godot's thing about variety arts are for people that see the movie Groundhog Day and think it'd be a good idea.
Oh, right. So what makes you change things? Is it you getting bored with what you're doing or realizing that the audience isn't reacting the way they were? How do you keep it fresh? Something like that you've been doing for years, how do you keep it fresh? So kind of can wrap into both of those.
I think what decides need to be changed is a lack of response from the audience, obviously. It's funny, I'll get to beats, and I don't know if it's because my whole character changes or, you know, whatever, but I'll get to lines and that have always gotten laughs, and suddenly they won't get laughs anymore, and I don't know why. Or beats that used to get applause, and now they don't. I'm just like, I don't understand what's up with this. So I'll tweak with that and monkey around. As for keeping fresh, I think having something new in the show at some point is a great way to keep you fresh. Even if it's not in that routine, it will keep you thinking ahead and like, all right, remember to try this line or, you know, do this way. And throwing those in is a really good way to keep things fresh for me. So every time, you know, I do notes, I have a notebook and write notes after every show that I do. I videotape all my shows. And I always have like, all right, for the next show, I need to do this and try this idea out. And having that kind of checklist, even if it's three things, I think goes a long way in just making sure that you're in the moment and fresh, because you're kind of thinking, okay, I'm going to do something I've never done before in about 5 minutes. And for me, that works very well at keeping me in the moment.
Do you think, how you said, sometimes something that has always gotten like an applause break or always gotten a laugh, and all of a sudden it doesn't? Is that because you are losing some part of that magic moment because you're anticipating their applause or their laughter? Because sometimes I find when I'm on stage, I try to keep most of my like jokes and funny. I don't really write jokes. Mm-hmm. I like to bring a person up and something happens that they do, that it comes from them. And I find that I can be pretty quick and make something funny happen. And that's when I get my biggest laugh. And if I try to recreate that in the next show, it goes away.
See, and that's the difference. For me, if that happened, I would try to figure out how to make that happen every single show so I could have that moment, you know? And, you know, you fail, but it's always something fun. I agree, like, if you can get the audience member to have a joke line and they actually get to say the joke, that's amazing, where they create something fun. And for me, it's like, how can I engineer that to make that happen every single show and make it feel real? But I think, yeah, a lot of times I do anticipate applause and laughter at parts, and I'm like, why didn't that happen? That always throws me off. And it may be me just expecting more applause than maybe the beat's worth, the trick is worth. I buy into that.
You had another blog post that was something along the lines of expect nothing from your crowd. And that kind of ties into this, where, you know, what we're doing is generate, you know, our job is to get up there and kind of generate laughs, generate smiles, whatever it is. So that's a kind of a, seems to be a counterproductive thing if you go up there and don't expect anything from them. Talk about that a little bit, where that mindset comes from.
That's a very new one. I think that's like not even a week old, that post. And it stems from me kind of recognizing that, you know, I was born of the streets. So on the streets, you want people clapping and cheering and making noise because that draws more people and just makes a bigger show and ultimately makes you more money. So you want to convert everything, every moment of magic into applause as you can. And you have to, like, you know, there's all sorts of lines. We all know them for getting people to do that. And the problem is it makes me very needy, and that's not professional and polished. It's not really who I want to be. So lately I've been going out and just like, however they react, that's how they're going to react. I don't need anything from them. I'm not going to berate them for not laughing. I'm not going to use these lines, and really just go out and part of that also comes from is having a scripted show that's stronger and not needing the audience to interact with me, which is where a lot of, like, particularly my crowd gather material is just riffing with the audience and just pointing at people and laughing and having fun, not really making fun of people, but just playing with them and stuff like that. But, you know, I think that's one of the things that one of my major problems as a performer is just, I do expect the audience to clap and laugh and take part. And if they don't, I feel like, what are you guys doing? Which is funny, because as an audience member, I don't necessarily like to clap and laugh and have fun. So it's hypocritical, and that's why I'm trying to change myself. You know, I don't want to be pulled up on stage. I don't want to interact with you. I want you to entertain me. But if I'm on stage, I expect you to be able to do this. So, you know, it's changing. It's maturing. I'm still fairly young. I got a lot to learn.
Yeah, that's funny. I was just talking to, you know, I'm down in Atlantic City performing two nights a week right now in a very small, it's 150 seat theater. And sometimes it's not completely full, and and sometimes it's in a casino. So sometimes it's an early show. So sometimes like all old people, which, you know, and they're not drinking. So it's an interesting thing. And I was talking to the rest of the cast the other day about exactly that, saying, oh, what the heck? Like I do these things that always get laughs. in big rooms.
Yeah.
But then I was like, when I think about it, you know, if I go see a juggler or even a magician that's doing kind of a visual act, I'm not sitting there cheering at every trick that they do. I'm sitting like in silent, in awe almost. I'm loving it, but I'm sitting there watching, you know, enjoying it, appreciating it. You know, and I had to like constantly remind myself exactly that if I was in the audience, I wouldn't like every cool catch that I make. Yeah. I'm not going to be like, "Woo, all right, yeah." Where
and
like,
then, and I expect that from people. I'll do like this little thing, and I'll be like, "Why aren't you guys clapping? That was amazing." And I realize like I don't know if I would clap for that either. So yeah, you're totally right. You're totally right on that. There are natural applause cues, but you don't need to clap for every little, but I don't think that's right, especially for magic or even juggling, which is amazing. You just want to be like, wow, that's impressive. And that can be a very internal process.
And right.
We shouldn't rob our audiences if that's how they want to react and that's how they want to enjoy the show.
How do you keep on board when something like that happens, when maybe you have a very quiet audience who isn't very vocal about, you know, or cheering out loud? How do you not let that affect you?
So typically what I'll do is if the audience just isn't laughing, like they're just not laughing, I typically will actually cut out a lot of the comedy and play up the magic. Like if they're just not liking my brand of comedy, I will just nix, you know, segments that are just completely jokes and just slow down. Lately I've been really just kind of slowing down and waiting for them to get on board with me and just trying to win them over slower. And that, you know, that can do well if you have the time. You know, if you're doing a 15 minute set, it can be a little difficult, but if you got 30, 45 minutes, you can definitely slow down and win them over. You know, my character is sarcastic and, you know, doesn't ultimately take it too seriously. So I can always just kind of bluff it off and just be like, whatever. And that's in character and it's fine for me. And so I have that kind of advantage. I'm kind of bulletproof in that regard. I can totally just be like, I don't care what you guys think, you know, and the audience will, you know, I do, but I can just do that on stage and it doesn't really feel like I'm bombing as much. It's kind of one of the things about jugglers, which is nice. Jay Alexander and I were talking about this. You know, I worked a gig. It was a walk around gig for these, it was an association of networkers, which you want to talk about people that have no interest in doing magic, watching magic. I'm just being passed along to little fish by little fish, every person I group. And there was a juggler who was also working and he was in the corner on a roll of bola, just juggling something like clubs, I'm assuming. And nobody watched him for an hour and a half, but you looked over and it looked like he was working. Meanwhile, I'm running around trying to get people to interact with me. It's kind of nice when you can just do something visual that doesn't necessarily be a reaction, because at least it looks like you're working. And if you're doing comedy magic and you know if the magician, you know if the guy on stage sucks, if nobody's laughing and nobody's clapping. Whereas juggler, you can be juggling and at least you kind of look like you're doing something, you're doing your job.
Yeah. That's a really funny that you bring that up, because I often, if I try to get booked at it, or sometimes people ask about me doing like a walk around job or something of juggling, and I hate doing it. Because I don't like that feeling. Like, you looked over there and it looked like something, it looked cool. Oh, there's a cool juggler over in the corner. But like inside his mind, he's like, oh man, these people probably think I suck because no one's watching me.
This may be the most bizarre juggling gig you've ever heard of. I worked a gig, I was performing inside doing walk around magic, and they had booked another comedy team. We're on the Embarcadero to be street performers outside juggling where there's no people, but right. Just so that if anybody looked out the window, they would see people juggling fire. Uh-huh. And so my two friends were juggling fire in the middle of like the Embarcadero where there's no people at like 9 o'clock. Just they did like 10 sets of like juggling fire and knives back and forth. And it was the most bizarre thing ever. And I was like inside, like nice toasty warm, like chatting with people. That was pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's a cool thing where I think both sides of it, when you're doing the juggling type thing where you're just eye candy, a visual thing, you wish, oh, I wish I could just go interact with the people and you know, actually get reactions and get responses. But then, you know, because I've been the other side where I'm doing like table side stuff where you have to actually talk to people and interact. You can't just stand there. You can't do card tricks to yourself as much as you can juggle to yourself. And, you know, sometimes when you're walking around doing that, I'm sure you're like, oh, I wish I could just be the guy in the corner who's, you know, just practicing.
Yeah, pretty much.
Essentially.
Just providing atmosphere. And I'm working, do you know Dan Holdsman of the Raspini Brothers?
Not very personally.
But I'm doing a walk around gig on Wednesday, and he's doing walk around juggling. So it's funny you bring that up. And we've been talking. He's not totally stoked on it either.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because he comes from a background of people watching him and caring about what he's doing.
Yeah, you know, he's been on, like, Letterman and stuff. And it's like, right. Yeah, I'm just going to, you know, walk around juggling. It's great, though. It's great. It's crazy industry we're in.
What other challenges on stage have you run into as far as anything, whether it be tricks or audience members or hecklers?
So hecklers I've never really had much problem with. Like, I'm really pretty good about not really viewing them as like hecklers. Like, they just want to interact. I had a friend who thought going to a show meant making jokes to make me look funnier. And that was a huge insight. That's what he thought you were supposed to do. And for me, I was like, okay, there's people that go to shows and they just expect it's the magician, you mess them with them. And so if you get that, I'm usually really good about just being like, all right, this is what he thinks to do. Let's give him a little bit of time. Let's interact and then move on. And, you know, the times I've actually really been heckled where I feel like people are really trying to mess with me for no reason and not trying to help the show, or they don't think that's what they're supposed to be doing, are very few and far between. And it's kind of fun because then you get to pull out like all the mean stuff. You know, once the audience understands this person's an asshole, you can really rip into them. And that, you know, it's kind of fun. Talk about, you know, being fresh on stage. But other problems on stage lately, I've had two instances where I'm going to do this paintball catch, which I don't normally end on if I'm doing a fuller show. But if I'm doing a shorter show, it's my finale. Like on my street show currently, it's my finale. The problem is it's a mechanical trick and it's an 8-minute buildup. Then we'll like run out of CO2 or it'll jam and suddenly I can't do my finale, which really sucks. And I have backup plans for it. I wrote a whole blog post about this too. But still, like, that's always something I'm trying to – that's a big challenge, is when you build up your finale and you just suddenly can't do it. So what were the other ones?
So do you have – so, you know, magicians call them outs. If, you know, if something doesn't work, you have, a way out of that jam. Do you have do you have those backup plans in place for most of your routines?
Yeah, I always have one – I have an invisible deck on me at all times, which is a magic trick that's, really small, really good trick, and it plays huge. So if anything ultimately happens, that I could just launch into that routine and save myself. So at least I'm not ending on nothing. Like, okay, the paintball trick, if it's jammed, if it's out of CO2, it's done. Like, there's no recovering from that. You know, at least I can end on another routine. So that's kind of my ultimate out for that. A lot of what I do is sleight of hand, so I kind of know if I mess up ahead of time, which is great. And I know I can fix it right there. You know, I got a great, there's a guy named Jonathan Levitt who's a magician and he's also an actor. And I met him, I saw him lecture once and he said, you know, learn all the really complicated sleight of hand stuff and then don't use any of it. You know, perform it like 60% of your ability, because then you're going to get in trouble and then you'll be able to, you know, rev up to high gear and use this move that you have that you never plan on using. And I really kind of operate at that. You know, I got some really hardcore stuff that I don't really use typically, but I can do it if I need to, and if I'm messing up and I'm in a jam. And most of the stage stuff I don't really mess up on. It's been drilled pretty hard.
What about in your everyday life, like going out, hanging out with friends, you know, being somebody who is, you know, if someone introduces you to one of their friends, oh, what do you do? Oh, magician. You know, it's always, oh, show me a trick, show me something. Yeah. Are you prepared in most situations to show people something, or how do you deal with that?
I just wrote a whole blog post on that about how to say no in those situations. I don't, like, for me, my character is a little bit different. So if we've been hanging out like this for forever and then it's like, show me a trick, I have to switch characters, and that can be difficult for me. If we've just been chilling, I'm not really like a crazy, super funny guy normally, but on stage and when I'm performing, I am. So he hasn't made a single joke all day and now he's making jokes. What the hell is with that? I don't like carry anything on me, but I can do magic. I can borrow a quarter. I can borrow a ring. I can pick up a napkin and do stuff if I really want to. But I try to distance myself from it unless I'm really in the mood. Sometimes I'll go out and I'll be like, yeah, I'm down to do some like card tricks. I'm down to do something. But if I'm not, I'm usually just like, I'll show you one quick thing, or I'll even be like, look, I just came from a show. I just did 2 hours. Maybe I'll, you know, let me get a drink and then we'll talk about it later. Maybe I'll show you something. And usually in 2 hours they'll forgotten and they won't ask me.
Yeah.
But, like I've never used women, like I've never used magic to pick up women or anything. Like I hate that cliche. I don't do, I've always joked that the best woman for me is a girl where I say, my name is Ryan Kane and I'm a magician. And she goes, oh, cool. And doesn't ask me to see a magic trick. Like that's what I want. Like, that's the best thing you can say to me.
Right. Or she says, oh, I hate magic. No, you know, you're off the hook.
You're
fine. She's like, oh, I absolutely hate magic. Oh, ooh, see, all right. I'm smooth sailing. I don't have to worry about anything.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Not going to have to happen.
That's cool. That's something that the offstage personality versus the onstage personality is something that I kind of battle myself with, because one of the things for me is I do a lot of college shows.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest part about performing at colleges is hanging out with the students before the show, right, after the show, you know, because the students are the people who put on the shows there. There's like an advisor, but you know, yeah, you're not dealing with a professional theater technicians and all that. And the students are actually the ones that decide that you know, who's going to come onto campus and stuff. So, you know, a big part of what they remember is not what I do on stage. You know, it's when I show up, you know, and then I eat dinner in the cafeteria with them. They help me set up my show. And for me, I think sometimes it's a lot easier to like kind of shut down and just be me.
Yeah.
In that, but you kind of have to be on, you know, 2 hours before the show, then after the show, and you typically like, you know, go back to a hotel or whatever, and you still have to be like on, and they're expecting, you know, the promo reel version of you, where in my 3 minutes, I'm, you know, just hitting jokes and, you know, you know, it's all, you know, it's not only 3 minutes, but it's 3 minutes of the best, you know, 2 years of my life.
Right. Yeah. Edited perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah. with 2 weeks of work put into making it look good. Does that ever, where do you find that being it with you? Do you ever find that challenging?
I can totally relate. I think I have a bit of an advantage because, again, I do walk around magic. So I have a lot of lines and just kind of material for social situations. It really is material. Like, so if I'm just doing a show, you know, I can interact and still kind of have a bit of a character. But for me, it's really exhausting. Like, I'm an introvert. People are like, you're so extra. No, I'm an introvert. It takes effort for me to be. I think I pegged it down the other day. I was like, I think 7 hours is the most I can do, like really interacting with people. And then I just need to like go somewhere else and just like sit down and chill for like an hour or two, and then I'm back, and then I'm good. But I can't. It's really, really exhausting for me to be on, and to be interacting and making people laugh and stuff. It doesn't really come naturally. I make it look like it's natural, but it's, trust me, it's, I'm sure you know, it's like it takes energy. And that's one of the things when people say, "Oh my God, show me a trick." Oh, just one. They think that it's simple. Like they think it's like, "Oh, you're just gonna do this," but they don't understand it's a performance, and it's all these other levels that, you know, it's so much more energy than they ever think that it really is. And it's hard to convey that to them. And it's kind of rude because they're like, oh, he's not even gonna do one damn thing. It's, you know, it's tough. I'm tired. I do this for a living. I don't need to perform for you just because you've never seen a magic show before.
How about when you're doing street shows, like at the pier, you'll do what? Sometimes 3 shows in a day?
Yeah, I've done 5. I've actually done more than that. Yeah, the street shows, they're scheduled, so you can't do back-to-back-to-back. Ideally in a street, like when you're working the street, once you end your show and you've had it, which means they give you your money, you'll have people that'll walk up, and then you can start a new show right there. But the Pier 39, they need you have to, like, shut down, and then there's, like, an hour, and then you can build up again. So the most, I think there's like, 10 shows a day, and they're split up between as many as 4 performers. But if you schedule, you can take all the shows in one day if you want. I wouldn't recommend it, but you know, it's because it get exhausting. I hate the night shows. And I figured this out because at the night, all the other shows, your next show has the potential of being better than the last one. Right. So if you go out there at noon and it's not a great show, okay, but the 1:20, there'll be more people, it'll be better. The night show is the inverse. So if you get out there and the 6:30 show is terrible, you know that that 740 is probably going to be worse. And so it's hard just like to keep your morale up. It's like, oh man, it's going to be harder and harder.
I did the weekend that I was there. I was there, I think, in February. So like during the days, it was great. But then I had one nighttime spot and it was so cold out.
Yeah.
It was like so cold and so windy. And then by those late night ones, there was just nobody there watching. And it was tough. It was the same thing. Yeah, I did ones like the three last ones, and it was like, oh, cool, this is going to be awesome. And I'm thinking, oh, nighttime comes, it's going to be awesome, you know, a cooler atmosphere. And it just went down, and it got colder and colder by the minute, and people were not trying to sit around and watch.
This is with you guys. I don't have to deal with the wind because nothing, you know, it's not going to make it harder for me. But that wind messes. And the worst is when it's a really nice day, and so it's hot and people are like in shorts and stuff. And then because it's San Francisco, it gets cold at night. So then they go home. You know, if it's a bad day all day, the night can be good because they're actually wearing long sleeves and stuff. But the worst is when it's a beautiful hot day and then it gets cold and then they won't stop and watch the show. That's the worst.
What are there? So going back to, like I said, this week I read some of your blog posts, tried to get caught up on some of it. There was another one, a really cool thing you talked about in at some point about when you lose your, you know, you lose your train of thought or you are fumbling over a word. You said instead of keep fighting through it, just take a beat, smile, gather yourself, and then keep moving.
Well, I think this comes down to like what you were talking about of bringing someone up on stage and then they do something ridiculous. And it's great if you have a line because you've created a dialogue, so it has to go back to you and you have to have the line. But if you don't have one, just look at the audience and smile and then just look back. And that works just as well. I mean, that works for anything. You know, if they say something crazy, if you mess up, if your joke doesn't work or something, like it really is kind of a save all thing. I use it all the time. Like that's just my go-to. Somebody says something funny, I just you know, take a beat, smile, and all right, go back to what I was doing.
I found that there's a few times when I will do something and kind of do that by accident, not consciously. I'll just stop and I really just won't have anything. But then I'll just like get into this like kind of weird character in that moment, just and kind of like, you know, look at them with like weird eyes.
That's great.
And just like, you know, shrug or something.
Yeah.
And it'll be like they got the laugh from whatever moment it was, if there was like a girl up there. Mm-hmm. And then I've actually done a thing where like I go to say something, like take the breath in, like you're about to say something, and then just like almost look and just be like,
that's great.
You know, almost just like shrugging, like I don't even know what to say, even though the whole thing was kind of just like an act.
Yeah.
And then you just get this, you get the laugh, it hits again.
Yeah. Well, I think it's because it's honest. Like it's the honest reaction and you're owning up to it. So that's why I think people like is just like, you know, they can totally relate to that and it's funny. I've done some improv, you know, back in high school. And then also lately I have a buddy who runs an improv group and you know, the honest thing is usually the right course of action. Just do whatever's honest, whatever's the first thing that comes to mind when you're in a jam is usually the best thing you can do. Don't try to be clever. Just like, I don't have anything to say is a perfectly good thing to say when you don't have anything to say. And, I like that of going to say something is going, no, that's great.
Cause that really puts them on their edge too. The audience is sitting there like, oh, he's going to have a good comeback.
Yeah.
But in their mind, like for them, they're like, I don't know what I would say in this position. And you're like about to hit it. And then, like you said, you connect with them because it's super honest. And they're like, oh, that's funny because we were really expecting him to hit some like hotshot line. And he just admitted that there's nothing there. You know, it's like you do that. If you ever stop like about to say something, you're just drawing everyone in and you're just setting them up for whatever you want to give them. So that's a really cool thing. I kind of always battle with that. I try to like, you know, be faster talking, and then you know, I realize if you slow down and come off.
No, I've always I talk way too fast, and every show it's like my note is you can still be slower, still slow it down, still go slower, and because you know as a performer you know what's happening, you know what's coming next, and you don't give time to like let them hear and just really really be there. The use of silence is something I think a lot of performers don't use a lot, and it's a very powerful tool just to have moments of there's one moment in my show where it's just like suspended silence, and I've silenced bars doing that, like busy bar, nobody's talking just because of this one moment, because suddenly nothing's happening. Everyone's like, what's going on? And, you know, I love that. I love that feeling where you could just feel that they're with you. You know, that's you know, live theater is amazing because you get that dynamic you don't get from YouTube or a podcast or anything else.
Yeah. Now, there's I've sometimes found you'll be doing a show and you'll have people in the back will be chit chatting or something, especially at colleges, because sometimes I'm not in a theater, I'm in like a coffee house.
Yeah.
Where there's some people who are there for the coffee house, you know, to be studying with their friends, not for my show. My show just happened to be there. It's actually like distracting their study session.
That's fun.
And I've used that a lot where I slow down and just people are used to, you know, it's like, when you want someone to be quiet, you start yelling at them and it doesn't work. It just makes them louder.
Yeah.
And that, using that, the backwards where you just stop, then they're like, oh, this is weird that I'm being loud. And then they start doing it. They catch on and will be silent. I was actually, I went to college to be a teacher. So I have a teaching certificate. So there was some book, I forget what it was. There was like this guy's theory. And he when he first started teaching, he started out subbing.
Yeah.
So the kids just didn't respond. They were like, oh, this guy's not authority.
Yeah.
And he said he would walk in and try. He would yell and scream. And the whole, you know, that whole period, the kids would never shut up. And he said he came up with this theory that if he walks up there, stands tall and looks at him.
Yeah.
He said, it's going to take a while. But if you, like, someone has to break.
Yeah.
Either you have to break and, like, say, hey, shut up. Or they're going to break and, like, be like, okay, it looks like he's about to do something. We better shut up and listen. So if you're the stronger one, like, if you're that rock.
Yeah.
You can be the one who doesn't break.
Yeah, totally. No, that's
great. I kind of always remember that. And actually before, like right when I graduated, before I was performing full time, I started subbing and I was doing some subbing as well. And I would use it. I would walk in and just stop there. And then, you know, it's like there'll be people chatting and then like there's a few people in the front who are quiet. And then you'll see like them start to become your army.
Yeah.
They'll start to like monitor themselves. One person in the back would be like, oh, actually here, be quiet. One of the ones that was talking will just become on your side just because you are that such a strong authority and you're holding your ground.
You're the leader, and you know, that just shows strength. Like, look, we're gonna take our time. I'm gonna wait for you guys to catch up. Cool, now let's go. You know, like that's great. And I think it is better than, and that's part of why I'm trying to say, you know, expect nothing from your audience and not try to berate them for, you know, yelling at them and being funny and trying to correct that. Just, you know, it's so much better to be able to walk up and go, cool, let's go. You know, just take your beat and be quiet.
Do you have any other go-to things in your show like that, like mechanisms to capture your audience, like not as far as tricks, but as far as kind of psychological tricks to play on them?
I shake hands with a lot of people. Like if going back to kind of hecklers is if someone, and I tell them this, you know, like, come on, we just met, like, let's not start off antagonistically. And if I make fun of someone or they do, I'll just come up and shake their hand. Like if someone says a really funny joke, I'll just, you know, smile and then I'll just go and shake their hands and like, you know, no words or anything like that. But I think coming at people, because there are so many kind of jokes in my show, but coming at them with like sincere, just like, hey, that was cool. Like shaking their hands just disarms the hell out of them. And they, you know, you're not going to make fun of me. You're not going to attack me anymore. So I do shake hands a lot. I also make people clap. Like if there's one guy who's just like here the whole time, there's actually a couple beats in my show where I just drop everything, walk over, pick up his hands and make him clap. And then I just shake his hand and walk back on stage. And, you know, those can be good moments. And, you know, I talk about this in my expect nothing from the audience is I think you shouldn't expect anything from the audience, but I can expect something from an individual because now I've created a character. There's a story arc there. And I try to end that story arc on something positive. So if you're sitting in the front row and you're doing this the entire show, and now I'm like, hey, you know, you're crossing arms. I realize this is a podcast. Nobody can see me. But you know, if the guy's sitting up front with his arms crossed and my character draws a fence from this and I start, you know, engaging this person, that's a story arc. and there's drama there and there's stuff that can happen there, as opposed to me yelling at an entire audience for not clapping or not applauding. So I can, this can be resolved, and this is something we can grow from, and I can go make him clap and then thank him and ideally have him come out on the end. So I try to do that and build these different, there's a character in my show where I asked for an audience, a kid to come up, and I say, come on up, kid, the audience will applaud for you. And then there's always one person who won't clap, and I point to him and he's like, all right, except for that man, because he hates children. And I would just establish him as the man who hates children. And there's, if I'm doing a fuller show, there's callbacks to him. And he gets in, but at the end, I'm like, no, I admire this man. He knows what he likes, he knows what he hates, and he stands by it. Let's all clap for him. So he ends up being good. So it actually has a higher, you know, he ends up on top, and there's a story arc there that I like. But I think that's much better than just yelling at a whole audience for not clapping or expecting that, because I'm creating something unique.
Right, and you're making it where he's not the enemy, and you're pointing him out and isolating him, but not in a completely negative way where he's not going to be like, he's not going to be pissed off at the end of the show.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people start playing around with that, you know, like, because it's such a ridiculous, the man who hates children, I usually choose a dad. So like he's like holding a kid or something, like,
right.
So ridiculous. But then even still, like, if you're gonna put someone and cast them as a character in your show, like, make it something that's either so ridiculous that they know they're not, that you're not being serious, or something that's positive. You know, if I'm at Pier 39, so Alcatraz is right there. So if I see anybody wearing black and white stripes, I say, you know, did you just escape from Alcatraz? I have to report you if you did. Like, you know, they're a criminal, but they know they're not a criminal. It's ridiculous.
Right, it's something that's like it's not funny, but like it's not a funny joke, really.
Yeah.
But in that setting, like when you say it to me, like it's not funny.
Yeah.
It's like cheesy, but then you get a crowd of people out there, and they all look at them. Like it probably erupts into it's perfect.
Yeah. It breaks because this person is just walking along.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and the whole audience is in on it, and they're laughing at their reaction. They're not laughing at the joke. They're laughing at this person's reaction. They're wanting
right.
to see.
Yeah, you're utilizing that.
They'll look around like what's going on and not catch that there's even a show going on. And other times they'll say yes, you know? And, you know, they'll play along, and that's fun. That's what I love about live theater. And it comes down to what you're talking about too, of bringing people up on stage and seeing what they do and not necessarily having it scripted.
So what else, what do you have coming up? Do you have anything to tell the world about, to plug anything or anything?
You guys can definitely read my blog if you're interested. It's marksofcain.wordpress.com. That might shift over to like an actual website sometime, but I've been out of town. Like I said, I've been all over the place, so I haven't had time to do that. But I don't have like any real shows. I'm trying to focus on doing street stuff and just rewriting a lot of pieces in my show. So I don't have like any big shows coming up that people can come see.
How about for young people or old people who are trying to create their life in a way that, create an interesting life, as you've decided to become, you know, a performer and a magician and are making a living and making a life out of it, which is kind of an exceptional thing that most people don't get to do. There's a lot of people that would love to do that. What have you learned that you could, words of wisdom?
I think, like, if you're in high school right now and you want to go into the arts or go into, you know, something that's not going to be the 9-to-5, that's one of those, like, jobs that people say you need a backup career for, and you're in high school, experiment right now. Like, right now's the time to do it. Like, go do shows, get with people, do internships, because you have no bills. The responsibility only gets added later. And, you know, I interned at a theater in Sacramento, Summerstock Theater. And the day one, they just came in and said, be a sponge, learn everything and try everything. And, you know, I did that to an extent, but looking back, like I could have done way more. So if you're in high school, like just do it, just try. Nobody cares. You can't suck when you're in high school because you're just in high school. Like nobody's going to be like, oh, that's terrible. No one's going to give you bad reviews. You can only win. So, you know, that just do that. I'm a big on not having a backup plan. Like I put all my eggs. I went to college and I left after 3 years. And I really think it's one of the best decisions I ever made for myself. My brother graduates with a molecular biology degree next month. Cool. He needs to go to college. I don't. And I've taught myself more being outside of college than ever. So don't necessarily listen to you have to have the the backup career, because, you know, when the going gets rough, yeah, you're either go to that career and you'll regret it. You know, you'll regret not going after your dreams, or you'll just work harder and your dreams actually happen, which is kind of what has happened with me. You know, I have street performing, which is great. I'll never starve. You can give me a rock and a stick and I can go out and do a show and make a dollar. And then I can use that dollar to buy a deck of cards. And then I can, you know, I will never, ever starve as long as I have a skill set. So develop that skill set earlier and hope, you know, and then figure out a way to get paid for it.
Yeah, that's a cool thing too, especially now with the internet. There's you can make something that really sucks and in 2 days it's gone and no one cares anymore.
Yeah, it's just nobody really cares, you know? And it's just like, it's amazing what you can do with like podcasts and videos and stuff. This stuff was kind of around when we were in high school, but not to the extent that it was so easy. We could get really good audio equipment and really good cameras for so cheap and be able, you know, every computer, every phone has a camera now. That didn't exist. So there's so much stuff you can do in getting the word out. You know, you can promote an entire show just via Facebook. That's amazing. I used to say, you don't want to do a show, you just have like flyers and like a whole advertising budget. And I have a buddy, he's selling a 500 seat theaters, and just through Facebook, he has no advertising budget. It's crazy. So, you know, just do it if you're in high school or you're younger or whatever. Just go out and play. The best shows I've done are where I'm just playing with my audience and we're just having a good time. And it's fun. Good life.
Just do it. That is some simple yet amazing advice from Ryan. And that's so true. It's so easy for us to share our stories and our experiences with the world. If you're listening to this right now, that means you have a phone or a computer that is capable of creating amazing content, whether it be videos or a podcast or pretty much anything that you want to create. So what are you waiting for? Go do something. Just do it. Go check out Ryan's blog at marksofcane.wordpress.com or just Google search Ryan Kane Magician blog and you'll find it. As always, you can find me and interact with me on Twitter or Instagram. My name on there is One Man Variety, spelled out One Man Variety. And of course, come see me in Atlantic City. I'm performing every Wednesday and Friday in The Curious Show at Taj Mahal, right on the boardwalk. Just do it.
Thank you for listening to the Chris Ruggiero Podcast.